in a sense, you know, the dominoes are falling. The UAP, UFO dominoes are falling, and it looks like we're headed toward a new understanding of this, or at least an opportunity for a new understanding. I understand that, you know, you're going to have a lot of different points of view, and it's necessary to have a lot of different points of view for something this important. I guess the ones that that really stick in my craw are the opinions that require our military to be stupid in order for them to make sense. The attacks on, well, you know, they somehow with these multi-million dollar airplanes and warships and sensors and really highly trained pilots and naval officers, that they're dumb, that they don't recognize a seagull or a pelican or their own jets exhaust. It's not a tenable position to defend, I don't think. And we're about to get a lot more information that will explain that. I'm going to talk about what might be coming in the UAP Task Force report with Bryce Zabel. And then in a bit, we'll open up the phone line, see what's on your mind right after this. So, Bryce, let's talk about the military a little bit. You know, we see these images that have been released, some of them leaked, some of them released, the Tic Tac and Gimbal and Go Fast, and then some of the things that Jeremy Corbell and I have come up with. And the images are a form of information and are valuable, but they're not necessarily the most important documentation that would be in the hands of our military. So there's a lot of backup for, like, the Gimbal sensor information that would be, I think, would be more substantial documentation for the legitimacy of those cases. So when I see people attack the images and just try to make something that looks sort of like it, therefore the whole thing is debunked, you have to imply that the people involved in our military are stupid. And I think you can pretty safely say that they're not. And the technical capabilities are the best in the world. So, you know, those are the ones that kind of irritate me.
Well, don't be irritated too long, because that very military capability is going to be the thing that cracks this nut open. What you're saying, though, has been going on a long time. Go back to Roswell in 1947. I mean, this was a nuclear bomber base, right? So the very guys that we were trusting with War and Peace and with nuclear weapons were people that we said couldn't identify a weather balloon, right? So we've been attacking military guys, but what's going on right now is we have very rigorous scientific proof in the form of data. We have sonar and satellite data. We have Spy 1 radar, infrared recordings, acoustics, electro-optical recordings, you know, whatever else. I mean, we've just got all this data. So what's going to happen out of this UAP task force, I think, is that eventually we're going to get some congressional hearings, and this data is going to start being collected and distributed, and it's going to be an avalanche of data that just proves this thing positively. And, the people who are trying to debunk some of the, by the way, you and Jeremy have done phenomenal work, and congratulations. And the people that try to sort of debunk that, I think, are going to fall by the wayside, because they're going to be buried under this really, really good data.
The flip side of this, of course, is that the military has really put out a lot of disinfo, misinfo, and flat-out lies about the subject. You know, they've got memos and reports behind the scenes created before FOIA existed, where they acknowledge this is real, not fictitious. The Twining memo that 1947, it's real, it's not fictitious. We don't know where they're from. Very similar to what we've heard about the UAP task force so far.
You know, the Twining memo, that, one of the things that I try to do in this Trail of the Saucers site on Medium is to sometimes bring together things people haven't thought of for a while. And I wrote something about the Twining memo and why it was still relevant just last week, and it's gone through the roof because people are hungry for the past. It isn't just looking to the future. We also right now have to think about the past and what those lessons of the past were. Twining memo is a really terrific example. I mean, here's a very high-level general in the Air Force who's basically saying the phenomenon is something real and not visionary or fictitious. That's a quote. Well, that's a pretty major thing to come out in 47. But I take your point. The military is kind of on, I kind of feel on both sides of this with the military. I think they've got the data now, and if we can convince them to start sharing it through our representatives, then that'll be very helpful. But they've sort of shot themselves in the foot over the years. They have lied and they have obscured. And the reason we're partly where we are right now, where there's been this stigma that's prevented science and education and media from taking a look at it, is the military invented the policy of denial and ridicule. And they did it in starting in 47, but really they got it worked out in the 50s. If you just deny that anything's going on, and if anyone tries to say something is going on, and you make them feel small and insignificant and silly and make fun of them for doing it, people are going to stop doing that. And it worked perfectly. I mean, to this day, you know, you've got Neil deGrasse Tyson, as we talked about, making jokes about alien costumes. You got people, you've still got news people on television broadcasts trotting out the X-Files theme, and you still got anchors smiling about little green men, and you've still got news producers taking the UFO piece and making it the end of the newscast, because that's where you put the kind of funny little kicker piece.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's still work to be done on this. It's just that the signs across the board are that progress is being made, and that's, you know, I think sometimes I have a tendency to be very glib, and I'm sorry about that. I want to lose the glib for a minute. This thing is on. We have proof. Now, we're not sharing that proof right now like we need to, but that's about to change. And I think we're going to see some deeply important things happening. One of them is that it sounds like our now moribund Congress is going to try to kick itself into activity. And as they do, you're going to see congressional hearings that will make the Watergate hearings seem like very unimportant in comparison. And when they do have these hearings, they're going to be granting witnesses immunity to testify, and we're going to have subpoena power for these hearings. And it's on. So I take it respectfully, and I know that what's about to happen is going to shake a lot of us up. And I feel very strongly that that this is a big deal. This is the time of our lives. This is the moment we're going to look back on, and we're going to say, "Do you remember the 2020s when all that happened?" This is on.
You know, we don't. Obviously, no one expects the UAP task force report that goes to Congress to declare they're space aliens. Obviously, that's, you know, it's a process that we're going to have to go through. There's going to have to be a permanent program that can drill down into this, that really digs up the secrets, the stuff that's stashed away in dark corners and files, and finds the people that have really had the best access over time. But and if that happens, that's great. And maybe the congressional hearings, as you've discussed too, but you know, at eventually, hopefully we get some answers there. It could be pretty disturbing. You know, ET, we've kind of got we got to wrap our heads around that, you know, that they could be visitors from outer space.
Cause there's some, I think you're right on, George. I mean, it's one thing to sort of dance around the topic as we're kind of doing, and there's no other way to discuss because we don't actually know everything, but there's a lot of people, you know, is particularly in the ufology circles, who are saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't be pursuing this threat narrative, and it's all threat narrative stuff. I don't actually believe that. I mean, from my point of view, you know, it's you know, to quote Tom DeLonge, I guess, I mean, you interviewed him. In fact, it was your interview with him where he started talking about how there was a faction of well-meaning, public-spirited military people who have seen all this better data that I was just talking about. And those people believe that we're regularly being visited by non-human tech. And I think that that's just a reality that we may have to come to grips with. And I don't know that it's not a threat. I mean, if you have somebody who is capable of taking nuclear weapons offline and putting them back online, I think you need to know more before you can say it's not a threat. So I actually, I guess I would hearken back to Ronald Reagan's take, which was trust but verify. I think that's where we got to be on that one.
What I was leading to is that the idea that there are ETs visiting us from other planets is an idea that the general public can probably handle because we've been conditioned to handle it for so long, movies and TV. But interdimensional is going to take a little bit more explaining to understand that. Temporal, that they're us from the future. Ultra-terrestrial, something that's always been here. I think people are going to have trouble with that, the idea that they've been living here maybe longer than us. We just can't see them. They can see us and they can come into our world, but we can't. That's going to freak some people out.
It's going to freak people out, but in a way, we don't know. What you just said sounds pretty good to me. I mean, it sounds like I can, well, yeah, I agree with that. On the other hand, what we might also say is if it's non-human, it's non-human, whether that's whether that's ultra-dimensional or extraterrestrial, I'm not sure at the end of the day if it's a non-human intelligence that it's going to matter that much in terms of that. What might matter is that they're not from out there and they're not from across the dimension divide, that they're actually from here. That would freak people out as much as I think almost anything could. But we don't know. We don't have the data. We haven't helped ourselves look into these things. We don't know if we're dealing with biological organisms. We might be dealing with a super advanced AI. We just don't have the facts. What we do know is we're not dealing with Russia and China and secret black ops programs here in the United States. So we are going to have to get our heads wrapped around something that's pretty crazy.
I think it's a long way to go. And then ultimately, let's say you figure out where they're from, then you got to confront why they're here, what their interest is in us. There are some pretty dark scenarios that can unfold there. You know, Charles Fort long ago saying he thinks Earth is someone's property. What if we're an agricultural product? What is it that they need from us? Well, what, if anything, you know?
You know, those are pretty profound questions. And, you know, the thing is, it's easy to get on your high horse and say, how dare the military, cover this up all these years and all that. And I've done it myself.
Yeah.
I've done it tonight. But
maybe they got a reason.
Well, that's just it. You know, maybe there's a really strong reason that people have been doing this because they haven't quite been able to figure out what it is, and they don't know how to tell anybody because it's so bizarre. And we don't know that right now. We just don't know. But we all want to know. I'm ready to know.
You, of course, I mentioned in the introduction about Dark Skies, your show. It's almost 25 years. Tell me about where your thinking was then and what lessons it might have for us now.
Well, my thinking when I did Dark Skies, on one level, it's an alien invasion piece, which is kind of a staple of Hollywood, and that's sort of how we sold it. But what my partner, Brent Friedman, and I were thinking at the time was, if Roswell was a true event, then virtually everything that's happened in the last years has been influenced behind the scenes by that. So we set our series in the 60s. I think what's potentially interesting right now, given where we are, is that behind the scenes, I know that there's a gentleman who, I'm trying to remember Sam Harris, right, who is sort of claiming now that he thinks people are reaching out to him about how to reveal this to people and so forth. Well, Brent and I were approached by people who said they were from the Office of Naval Intelligence who said the same thing. I don't know if they were or they weren't, but I think that the idea that it's time to get people ready has been out there for a long time. So long, in fact, as you point out, that we've seen all the television and the feature films about it, that I think we're probably as ready as we're going to get. So the lesson for me of Dark Skies was just you know, people saw what we were doing and relating history to an alien thing, and they were okay with that. They wanted to. A lot of people who watched the show said, "I like the fact that you're involving real facts into it, because at someday when this comes out and people are discussing it in a news sense, this is all going to be like a history book." So I think that's what I take most from it.
You know, you look at all that's happened, and I know I've heard it from so many people that it looks like it's all some big coordinated plan, you know, that series of events, and it's not. It just isn't. There's a whole bunch of things that happened independently that were mutually supportive of the larger target, you know, that happened. I mean, just Harry Reid getting interested in it, and Bigelow creating NIDS, and NIDS becoming a model for OSAP, the money that Reid gets for that program, and then a smaller group growing up and evolving in the Pentagon that becomes ATIP, Lou Elizondo working with a really good group of people in there and studying these things, growing frustrated and leaving, Tom DeLonge, the rock star, creating a platform where Lou has a home, a place to land, and along with Chris Mellon, and those guys going to work on Congress, going to work on the media environment. It's a whole bunch of different things, and a lot of players who weren't necessarily all working in conjunction with each other.
It's
just kind of happened,
isn't it?
Yeah.
If it didn't happen, you'd say, well, that couldn't happen. So in fact, just to kind of pivot this back, when we did write AD After Disclosure, we didn't quite describe it the way that you described it right now, and it sounds shocking when you describe it that way, that what has happened is this group of individuals, some related, some not, with a good dose of random chance in there, somehow it's come together where it's now happening. And it's like you said earlier, you probably thought at one point, this is just never going to get out in my lifetime. And that probably made you feel a little depressed, certainly made me feel depressed. And now I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like, to be honest with you, George, I feel like it's 2 years.
Yeah.
I think it's 2 years before. Well, let me describe what I mean by what would happen in 2 years. I think within 2 years, we are going to be in a place where virtually everybody on the planet understands that something that exceeds a human intelligence is behind these devices. And that's pretty radical, and I didn't think it would happen that fast.
I am hoping that we do get a program, that they put up some money and establish something that doesn't necessarily have anybody's thumb on the scales, that allows it to follow the evidence where it leads and report back with more substantial findings than what we're probably going to have from this task force. I applaud the people that have taken the ball and carried it down the field this far. They didn't have a lot of resources to get a report together in a ridiculous 6 months of time. So I'm encouraged by the leaks that we heard from the New York Times about what's going to be in there. Sounds like 120 cases that have been, you know, really carefully screened, that have backup material, that have images. There's a lot of people been working behind the scenes to gather this stuff up, and I'm excited to see what they release.
I hope some of those images that you and Jeremy have had to scrap for the images you've got, I hope that they at least put out a couple of great photos and some great videos that go along with this, because that would go a long, long way
to
waking people up.
And they've got them, that's for sure. Bryce Zabel is my guest, and we'll take some calls when we come back. We have another great writer as our guest tonight, Bryce Zabel, and in a moment we open up the phone lines to see what's on your mind, talking about the UAP task force, what might be coming next, what the ultimate answers might be. You know, we assume maybe that it might be one general answer, ET, interdimensional, ultra-terrestrial, whatever. Maybe it's more than one. Maybe there's more than one answer. Maybe some of these are Chinese drones, but that doesn't explain the bulk of the kind of cases we're talking about tonight. We'll be right back. A lot of folks on the phones waiting to talk to Bryce Zabel. Bryce, before we go there, one last issue to raise. You know, maybe it's more than one answer. It's not something that's just interdimensional or time travelers or ETs. Maybe it's all of the above and then something else that's more exotic than we've even thought of.
I think that's probably the truth. I've always believed it just feels reasonable to me that all intelligent life is interesting to other intelligent life. So I think once somebody figures out that we're here, then others are going to figure it out. We may be in the middle of something very, very unusual. And I thought about, you know, the very first movie I ever wrote was something called Official Denial. And the whole concept of the movie is that they were us from the future and they weren't aliens. So my mind is wide open on that. I don't have, the facts that other people might have, but there's nothing out there that would say you can't have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. In fact, that would probably make a certain amount of sense.
Let's take a couple of calls. We've got somebody on our international line, Cole in Tijuana. Hi, Cole. You're on with Bryce Zabel.
Hi, guys. George, I just want to say it's always a treat when you're on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the interdimensional idea. And I just wanted to preface it real quick by saying I was always a bit of a naysayer. I thought maybe there's aliens, but maybe they're stupider than us or whatever. And man has always wanted to fly. And maybe once we did, you know, maybe we're projecting a little bit that they would fly here. And after personally ingesting a substance called DMT, which is a psychedelic substance, I saw these beings and it ended my naysaying a bit. And I talked to other people who also saw beings after ingesting this psychedelic substance. Have you heard anything else along those lines?
Well, I mean, I certainly have read about that, and you're right. There have been some pretty good books and studies done on it, there are similarities that are reported by people who take this stuff, and they do not only meet them, but have conversations. Sometimes they don't always go well, the conversations, but I'm not as familiar enough to be an authority on it. Bryce, any thoughts?
Well, I think that there's lots of anecdotal evidence about people that have taken various drugs and have seen things. And I don't know what that means or what it doesn't mean, but with the call started talking about interdimensionality, I think that there's something that might be part of that. I mean, if you think about it, we continue to see these devices interact with our nuclear facilities. And we also know that we started seeing them in larger numbers starting in 1947, right after we had exploded a couple of bombs. What if a nuclear weapon tears a hole in the fabric of dimensions and hurts somebody else who's in the same space we're at but in a different dimension? We don't know. I mean, but there's something going on with nuclear weapons, and that might be more likely a dimensional thing than it is a extraterrestrial thing.
Yeah. Thanks, Cole. Appreciate the call from Tijuana. We're going to a wildcard line, Bill in Los Angeles. Hi, Bill. You're on with Bryce Zabel.
Hi, George and Bryce. I'm a former newspaper journalist, Columbia J School, 86.
Awesome.
And I'm not going to hold my breath on June 25th because I think trust in the mainstream media and in the U.S. government is at a deservedly all-time low based on a lot of things. Yeah, that happened last year, including the things you mentioned about UFO jokes and these crackpots like Tyson. And also military and computer technology are advancing so rapidly that I think there's now a psychological fog that prevents people from believing, even in videos that are released. Like this John D'Souza guy was on with George Norrie last week. He said, oh, those Navy videos can be proved forensically fake. And I got into it with him, and I reminded him that George Knapp interviewed Elizondo about those things, and he started speculating about an interview that he never even saw. And he said, well, I doubt if Knapp asked him if he's a crisis actor. So this is the kind of garbage that you're up against.
Well, I think your skepticism is duly noted and is appropriate. I mean, you know, we should temper our expectations about what's coming out for sure, because we've been disappointed before, right, Bryce?
Yeah, I don't have giant expectations for the report, but I do think the mere existence of the report is something interesting, and I think we already have enough of a leak in the New York Times reporting that it's going to blow, it may not blow your mind or my mind, but it's going to blow some people's minds when they realize, you know, what it says. I just wanted to add one other thing that I was thinking while listening to that. We don't have to wait for the government to disclose this to us. I mean, it'd be nice if they would tell us what they know, but we are on the verge of being able to disclose this to ourselves. I mean, we have access to technology today in the private sphere and with average people that governments didn't have, 30 years ago. So we're preparing to jump into the world of whoever these others are, and we will figure out who they are on our own if the government doesn't want to help us. So whether that June 25th report is everything you want it to be or it's not, it's just the beginning. It's not the end.
Thanks, Bill. Good observations. We're going east of the Rockies. Bob in Indiana. Good morning, Bob. You're on with Bryce Zabel.
How are you, gentlemen?
We're good. What's on your mind?
We're hot. 1952, last 2 weeks of September, there was Operation Main Brace. And apparently, there were like several hundred sightings by all the navies in NATO. And they did a study. The Navy did a study on it and decided to classify it above top secret, put it in mothballs, and there it sits. And to me, the Navy has been more open than the Air Force, which was charged with investigating this for 70 years. And I just wonder if either of you think maybe that they would release that or the results of that investigation. And thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. I don't know much about it. I've heard about it, about what you just described to us. Bryce, are you up on that one?
Not enough to comment confidently about it, but I will say this. One of the things that we should be also thinking about doing right now, one of the reasons I like to write at whatifufos.com, is because I think we need to also look to the past. So your caller is correct in saying there are lots of interesting cases in the past that have documentation that's been released through FOIA, and they're just great cases. And I think we are going to hurt ourselves if we only focus on, well, what can we prove from, you know, in the 2000s and so forth, because they have been accumulating information for many, many decades now, and we need to get our hands on more of that.
Yeah, good point. Thanks for the call. A lot of files have been purged. They say they just didn't have room. It's a regular thing. We didn't mean to throw away the UFO stuff. But you'd think that they would hang on to those kind of things. But
I just don't even believe that. I believe that files, if a file was purged, like the Roswell files disappeared for 47.
Right.
But I don't think they were purged. I think somebody disappeared them. I also think that once a disclosure happens, we're going to find certain, like right now, I'm involved in the Betty and Barney Hill case and the Travis Walton case. There are probably classified memos about both of those cases that we've never seen, and that we might see after disclosure. We might realize something about those cases we never knew before.
Yeah, there's a huge body of information, that's for sure. And some of it is in secret files. Some of it's in the public arena. There's things that ufologists have dug up that's out there that hasn't been looked at in a long time, at least by the military or by Congress, for sure.
George, that's one of the things that I've most enjoyed doing is asking myself, are there cases where, I could take it to another level? So I like, for example, I've done a couple of deep dives where I've just enjoyed doing it, where I looked into the McMinnville photos, those Costa Rica photos from 1971. I even looked into John Lennon's sighting, just because I thought we need to preserve our history, because once we acknowledge this thing's been going on, then suddenly things that look kind of silly, maybe in retrospect or possibly not even true, we'll have to reevaluate all that stuff, because there's new information that's going to come out, and it will make us see the past in a different way as well.
John Lennon drew a flying saucer, a drawing, when he was young. And I was in, this is a year ago, no, 2 years ago, I was in a bidding war. It was being sold, and got into this auction, And I was about $10,000, close to $10,000 in, and somebody swooped in the last 10 seconds and got it.
I wish you'd gotten it, because if you did, I'd be getting in my car and driving to Las Vegas right now to see it.
We're going to John in St. Louis on the wild card line. Hi, John.
Good morning, George and Bryce. Very interesting show. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
Okay. The comment is that I couldn't disagree with you more, that it will be, when the disclosure happens, it will be big news. But a lot of people study this issue. We know there's something to this. It's something, but what is it? And why is there a cat and mouse game? Why does it always seem to be over here and then over there? I think the reason I really disagree with your thing, that you said it would be the biggest news of human history. Now, I think of human history would be the biggest news ever was when Jesus Christ, God in Jesus Christ's form, came into the earth and defied the laws of physics. And there's so much strong circumstantial evidence on this fact. Okay, so my question, though, is why, and a lot of people that study this think it is fallen angels. The goal is to deceive mankind. So my question is, we've had that space station up there for 20 years. If they're really flying around in and out, why don't they park right up there? Just pull right up there. This is a space station. That would be natural. There's a vehicle right here. Let's pull up there. Why hasn't that happened?
Well, I mean, we don't know if it's happened. We don't have that information. Because we haven't heard about it doesn't mean it didn't happen. But if it's the same question that's always asked, why don't they land on the White House lawn, Bryce?
Yeah, well, you know, two responses. First, there are a lot of people that do ascribe religious implications to these. I worked with a gentleman on a series in the past who knew more about UFOs by a power of 10 than I did at the time. And he knew it, and he was an evangelical Christian, and it was very important to him. And so that ties in with the feeling that there are people in the Pentagon who believe that way. The other thing I was just going to say is, what can we tell about us and the others? Both parties agree. You know, why don't we get this information out? Well, it's been difficult because if you think about it, both parties agree on only one thing that we can be sure of, and that is that it should have been kept secret. We could have called the news conference at any time and given everybody photos and videos and films, but we didn't do it. And they could have landed literally on the White House lawn, as you said, and announced their presence. Neither party has done that. Secrecy is something that has been a shared value between humans and whoever these others are. And that's why it's been such a difficult thing to make public.
Yeah. I mean, Whitley Strieber wrote about it a long time ago, saying that the visitors, whoever they are, wherever they're from, they're the true architects of the secrecy. It starts with them. They could end it in a heartbeat if they wanted to. They haven't done it.
But the flip side of that, George, is that if they're the architect of the secrecy, then you have to look at what they're doing right now and saying they're doing it with intent. So the idea that we're bumping into them, as the pilot said in the 60 Minutes piece, that they're out there every single day.
Yeah, well, I know.
Then that's done with intent. Whoever's flying these things is doing it on purpose and doing it in a way that we see it. So you've got to ask yourself, what's their intent? Why are they doing it that way?
I have to agree. It seems like they've upped the ante here. Those pilots, yeah. I had reported it a couple of years ago, and I think people thought I was making it up, but they were seeing them every day in 2014 and 2015, right in the lane that they fly, the airspace that they fly every single day. And then these ships, the nine ships off the coast of California, the Pacific Fleet, swarmed by these unknown objects, and they're presenting themselves in front of a technology that presumably they understand would be able to document it. They weren't shying away. Yeah. They wanted to be seen. And well, go ahead.
That's the point, isn't it? I mean, it's not, look, anyone who is technologically sophisticated enough to have what they seem to have and who has come from wherever they've come, probably is sophisticated enough to maintain a very low profile, if that's what they choose. And in fact, in many cases have, but in many cases, they have not maintained a low profile. Why is that? What, you know, they're clearly not trying to make it extremely obvious. They're not landing in Central Park, but they are hassling our militaries. Why are they doing that? That's the question.
Anyway, I appreciate the call there, John. I think we can try to get one more quick one in. West of the Rockies, Steve in Arizona. Good morning, Steve. You're on with Bryce Zabel and George Knapp.
Yeah, hi. You know, I wanted to ask him, your guest, you know, the size factor that isn't it kind of crazy to assume that they're going to be the same size as us? If it's a universe, you know, all these different sized planets, you know, they could be microscopic, the aliens, or, you know, the ETs, yeah. Or they could be way bigger than us. Their aircraft that are, however they get here, could be the size of our moon. You know, it could be all the way from that big. It could be huge or it could be really small. And you don't really hear much discussion on the size factor.
I think that's a really smart observation. But the truth of the matter is, we have seen a massive difference in sizes. There are some things that have been seen by people that are the size of three cruise ships out there. You know, what are they doing? You know, where'd they come from? And while I was writing AD After Disclosure, we ran across a case from Texas where a couple of high school kids had been sitting in the back having a single beer, and something about less than a foot across came and started buzzing around them. It was a saucer, and it was flying all around. This is in the 60s, flying all around them, and they ended up trying to catch it with a fishnet, right? So that's from huge to small. So I think the fact that there are such large differences in size may very well mean that there's also potentially differences in who's here.
Thank you for the call, Steve. Bryce, it's always great to talk to you. I feel energized after the conversation. I will post the link to so that people can read your stuff without the paywall. And I hope you'll keep me in the loop. Talk to you soon.
I sure will. And George, you know, I always enjoy this because it's intellectually stimulating. But also, we are just in the middle of a historical moment, and I am proud to share it with you. So thank you.
We'll be in touch. Thanks also to Katie Grabowski, our earlier guest, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Dan Galante and Donna Walker, Michael Cosio, producer Chris Boros, and our webmaster Ryan Stacey. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back the next two Sundays, so hope you can tune in then. Good night.